Take a deep breath. And remember, there's a power. Breathing you. This is your space of sanity in an evolving world, where we learn about spiritual law and how to apply it to our lives in a way that is practical and life-changing. This is where we remember truth to make the world a better place, one person at a time. I'm Claire Lautier, inspirational speaker, teacher of the technology of transformation, and a certified life mastery consultant and spiritual growth mentor. Welcome to the Grace Space. Sacred intimacy is the experience of the real you. It's natural. It just feels so natural. It's the naturalness of simply being as you are, because you're comfortable within yourself and you feel good in your own skin. You're not trying to please anybody anymore. You're not trying to be anybody anymore. And you frankly don't mind what anyone thinks about you anymore. It's releasing self-rejection and self-loathing, deep-seated self-hatred, and relaxing. Relaxation is our natural state. It's leaning back into the cosmic teddy bear, what I think of as the cosmic teddy bear. This was an image that Yogi Bhajan gave one time, that you're leaning back into this big cosmic teddy bear, the coziness of knowing that you're provided for, that everything is within you, that all is well. Is being okay, being alone with yourself without the need for the distractions we seek when we don't want to feel our feelings, like picking up your phone to scroll as soon as you're on your own. Instead, sacred intimacy draws you inward to relax and breathe and let go, enjoying the spaciousness and the peacefulness that are always available to you. It's intimacy with the sacred in you, that is you, that which is infinite, eternal, divine. It's the relief of waking up from the nightmare that you're alone, an isolated fragment in a hostile universe. That's hell. If you're not in sacred intimacy with yourself, it's no surprise. We, the people of the world, are being kept in a perpetual state of tension and anxiety. The nervous system is perpetually in fight or flight. If you consume mainstream media, and I highly recommend that you don't, your nervous system is under continuous assault from fear-based, highly polarized, negative propaganda, not to mention dangerously high levels of destructive electromagnetic fields and all kinds of environmental hazards. I mean, this is just the reality that we're dealing with. Our physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual organism is under a lot of stress. On top of all of that is mind control through bombardment in the media. Now, if you think mind control is limited to fictional, sinister, dystopian TV shows and movies, think again. The whole point of mind control is that you don't even realize you're being subjected to it until you wake up. When I was in the second grade at the French International School in Washington, D.C., where I grew up, we had a guest one day, and I still remember him. He stood next to a portable green board, you know, blackboard that's green, and wrote in large capital letters one word, propaganda. And he proceeded to explain to us in foreign-accented English what that was, the deliberate and systematic manipulation of symbols to influence individual thinking and public opinion. It seems amazing to me now that at all of 8 years old, we were introduced to a concept such as propaganda and trusted that we would grasp it on some level. And I guess they were right to trust us, because I still remember us children sitting on the floor, gathered around that green board, as this young man talked to us about propaganda. He told us he was from an island called Cuba and that he had escaped to the United States, where we had freedom. He explained that in his own country, people were not free, and that the government used propaganda to influence people without them even realizing they were being brainwashed. I remember being distressed by the idea of brainwashing, a term which evoked images of people's brains actually being washed with soap and bubbles. I remember feeling that this man must be brave to have escaped, and I wondered how he could tell what was going on without being brainwashed himself, so he must be very smart. And I remember him saying that America was admired by the rest of the world for letting people be free and think for themselves. It made me aware that there were places in the world where people were not free, where governments tried to control them and threaten them, and it made me sad. It also made me assume that we were safe in America and we could trust our government. Otherwise, this brave, smart man would not have risked his life to come here. Unfortunately, that's no longer true, if it ever really was. The land of the free has been infiltrated by globalist interests just like everywhere else, and all our systems have been corrupted by it. When I realized the extent of that corruption, it took me some time to recover from the shock and dismay. It's like that scene in one of my favorite movies ever, Free Guy, when he realizes that he's just a non-player character in a world where other people are the actual players. He feels betrayed, like his whole life means nothing, and he begins yelling at all the other non-player characters in the street who are going about their business as usual, deeply asleep inside their programming. "Don't you see?" he's raging. "None of this is real. It's all a lie." Everyone's staring at him. And then he gets hit by a car, bounces up in the air, and comes down hard on the pavement, and everyone resumes their trajectory as if nothing had happened. Of course, it's this painful realization which eventually gives birth to his creative power and allows him to access it and make the evolutionary leap to the paradisical world that's hidden and enfolded, encoded within the corruption and the degradation and the violence of so-called Free City, where he's always lived. He suddenly sees it for what it is, and that's what allows him to transcend it and take all the ones he loves with him. I have watched that movie at least a dozen times now because I'm fascinated by it. It really is a parable for our time. This year, many disturbing things are coming to light about the ways in which the various systems have failed us, not through honest mistakes, but through deliberate misleading, greed, and the desire for total domination, and how they're all connected in a coordinated effort to disempower, sicken, and manipulate the people of the world and turn us against one another to distract us from what's actually going on behind the scenes. I'm not being deliberately cryptic, but I don't want to take the time here to connect the dots for you. There are really good people out there exposing the corruption at great personal risk to themselves, and I suggest that you consult alternative media channels and transcend political polarization and opinion to open your mind to a bigger picture of what's going on the planetary level. Open your eyes. Open your mind, but especially open your heart. We will get through all of this, and we will get through it by opening our eyes, our minds, and our hearts, and shining the light in the darkness. I know it in my bones, because the light is increasing on this planet every day, very literally. Just go to spaceweather.com and see how many solar flares we're being bombarded with every day now. Whereas in 2016, for example, we had practically none all year. These photonic light explosions that are raining down on us were described by someone as stem cells for your soul. And I wish I could remember who it was to credit them for this beautiful, intuitive understanding. Humanity is being upgraded. We are ascending. People are waking up every day, and that is a bumpy ride because we can't take our density and heaviness and ignorance with us to a higher dimensional level, so we've got to process it now. And remember, the more light we shine on something, the more evident and apparent the corruption, the dirt, the brokenness, the damage that was always there. We're just seeing it now. The scales must fall from our eyes. It's a necessary disillusionment. Without mournfully dwelling on the darkness, we need to be aware of it so that we can ground ourselves and open to the solutions. I mean, alongside the death, the destruction, and the darkness we're all witnessing as the old ways of the old world collapse, amazing new systems and solutions and discoveries are happening every day in the midst of it all. Just like those early bright green shoots of snowdrops poking their heads up through the sodden piles of dead leaves left over from winter. So we need some skills to keep up during these challenging times where we're being pressured and squeezed like never before. We need to be able to change the channel. Not only change the channel on your TV away from the propaganda, but preferably turn the damn thing off and cover it with a beautiful piece of art. Changing the channel is a frequency thing. We function on frequencies, just like a TV or a phone does. So changing the channel is about knowing what vibration you're currently offering, because you're always offering a vibration. We have no choice in the matter, and tuning it up if it's down in the dumps. Now, I'm not saying suppress your feelings. It's the opposite. Acknowledge and accept what you're feeling at any given moment. Take off your shoes, put your bare feet on the earth, take a breath, relax your body, and let go. It's that simple. And that simple act will shift your vibration to a higher frequency effortlessly because you've just extended unconditional love and acceptance to your human while grounding your energy field in Mother Earth and her protection and her love. And that's how we change the channel to love. Love everything that's happening. Let the conflict, the wars, the rhetoric of falsehood, the suffering you witness, the disease, the deaths, the natural disasters, and the man-made disasters, let all of this into your deep heart. Feel the pain of separation from what's real and true, and let it break you open and stir the universal love of the spiritual heart, full of noble courage. This is who you really are. Recently, as you know, we had the mother of all eclipses. We were not in the eclipse path here in France, but I watched some time-lapse videos of various places in the path of totality afterward. That eerie moment of total darkness in the day is unforgettable. My throat got tight watching it. It seems to express everything we're going through now. The seeming disappearance or blotting out of the light, the shadow cast across the earth, the people with their little handheld lights in the darkness, and the feeling of portent that must be almost part of our DNA as we feel inextricably linked to the cosmos and its message for us. Here in France, I taught my regular Monday night yoga class as the eclipse was happening, and we did Surya Kriya, the Kriya for the sun energy, holding the light of the sun within us during the darkening. And this is what we've been invited to do. This is the consciousness into which we're being invited. Hold that light within us during this darkening, this seeming blotting out of the light. But we know the truth. The light is always coming back. In fact, it never left. It's always there. It's just obscured. In the scheme of things, this is temporary, just a blip. The light is growing, And that's why our eyes are being opened to what we're up against. During meditation, at the end of the class, we invoked the energy of Shiva, the god of destruction, death, and endings, to transform us by pruning away what is dead and done and must be dissolved now. And this is also what we're being called to do in consciousness, to die to the old by going into the darkness, right? We have to go into the darkness. We have to die, right? This is the myth, the mythology, the archetype of the death and the resurrection. And, you know, that moon rolling in front of the sun and then rolling back away again is like the stone in front of the tomb in the Bible story, right? The stone had been rolled away and then was the resurrection. So we go into this darkness, expose the corruption, and allow it to be purified as the blinding light of the sun shines forth once again, the death and the resurrection. And this is for all of us on the individual level, as well as on the collective level, because as we know, as within, so without. It can't exist out there unless we all, somewhere inside of us, have some part of that. We have some part of that which is ours to transform, transforming our own corruption, right? And by corruption, I mean, once again, any part of us that is in denial of our divine nature. I said it before, we have a lot of healing to do, and it's happening right now. We've been programmed to despise ourselves. And somewhere, we see ourselves as vermin because we've been taught to feel unworthy and guilty for just about everything, including breathing and taking up space. We are not vermin. We don't have to be the death of this planet. We're part of this planet. We are human beings, and human beings are made in the image of God. It is in our DNA. If you're human and you're alive today, it's because your soul chose to be here at this time. If you're listening to this, it's because you're waking up. And what a time to be alive. This is amazing. This is an amazing time to be alive. It's not for the faint of heart. In Kundalini Yoga, one of our sayings is, keep up. Keep up. Never has it applied more than now. Do not falter. Do not give up. Do not roll over or put your head in the sand. Keep up. We need everyone who is awake and waking up to add their voice to the universe, the one song. How do you add your voice? By vibrating in harmony with truth. And how do we do that? How do we do that, especially in the midst of intense pressure and chaos? Sadhana. Sadhana is a Sanskrit word that means spiritual practice. A sadhana is a spiritual practice, whatever helps you remember that you are a spiritual being. It's whatever helps you connect with your divine essence in sacred intimacy. It's whatever practice enables you to transcend the pairs of opposites and dive deep below the choppy surface of life. So it's a way of focusing your consciousness on what's real and true rather than on what isn't. Most of us have not developed an unshakable focus on truth. We don't necessarily have the ability yet to choose the object of our focus and to rest our attention on that object unwaveringly. I mean, we have moments where we can do that and moments where we do it without trying to. So why would you want to be able to do that? Well, it sure comes in handy when your mind is tormenting you or your emotions are carrying you away or dragging you down. Away from what? Down from what? Away from the seat of your awareness, the center of consciousness. Most of us are living in a hurricane. And we're constantly being blown around and around by these hurricane force winds, which are our thoughts and emotions. We get sucked out into the storm and tossed around, whirled about until we're dizzy and disoriented. Everyone knows that a characteristic of a hurricane is the eye of the storm, the place where the weather is fine, even beautiful, sunny, and calm. Being centered in our awareness is akin to living in the eye of the storm, where the weather is always fine. And that takes some practice. We spend all our time and energy trying to manage the storm when we're caught up in it, trying to right ourselves when we're being spun around, catch our breath, and find a direction, when what we really should do is just find the center, the eye of the storm, and rest there while everything goes on around us. This is where being able to choose the focus of your attention comes in. Forget trying to control the storm. You'll never be able to. We cannot control the mind. And this is where a lot of people get tripped up and stop a meditation practice before they even start. The misunderstanding is that meditation is about controlling your mind and your thoughts. They say, well, I can't meditate because I can't stop thinking. Well, of course not. It's not about that. It's about bringing your attention to where you want it to be, rather than letting it be drawn away into thinking. Meditation is not about controlling the mind. It's about focusing the beam of your attention. And that's different. Everyone who's tried to meditate knows the experience of sitting down and saying to yourself, okay, I'm going to meditate now. And before you even realize it, you're off in some story, replaying an incident from earlier in the day, worrying about it, thinking about what you should have said or what you're going to say the next time. And that thought leads you to another and another and another until at some point you wake up and realize you just spent the last 10 minutes on a runaway train of thought when your objective was to meditate. But this is what meditation is, the process of learning how to focus your attention on what you choose, rather than having your attention drawn away by the runaway trains of thought. This is why the simplest forms of practice give you a point of focus. Whether it's a breath, a mantra, or an image, whatever the point of focus is, that's not what matters so much as it is the process of noticing when you've drifted from the point of focus unconsciously, and then recommitting your attention to the object of focus. I liken it to training a dog. Training a dog to walk next to you, right? Your dog is on the leash and you want the dog to walk next to you, but the dog is more interested in following its nose everywhere. It smells things, it wants to go off and do its own thing, and you have to gently give the leash a tug and say to the dog, nope, come back, you're walking beside me. As many times as it takes. That's the process of training a dog, right? It wants to go its own way, it wants to follow its nose. You have to just keep bringing it back with a gentle tug on the leash. You say, nope, walk next to me. Nope, don't go over there. Walk next to me. This is where I want you. So similarly, we train our attention to walk next to us or to go where we want it to go, to be focused on what we choose to focus it on and not be subject to every distraction that comes along. In Kundalini Yoga, we have a mantra in English that goes like this. Me within me is the purity. Me within me is the reality. Me within me is the grace. I am the master of the space. Sadhana, or spiritual practice, is about learning to become the master of your space, so that no matter how crazy things get out there in the hurricane of life, you know how to bring yourself to the eye of the storm. You can eventually come to live in the eye of the storm because you've trained yourself to come back there over and over again. Henceforth, nothing and no one has the power to pull you off center. When we get pulled off center, we ourselves have given our power away. So it really doesn't matter what your sadhana is. It's whatever works for you. It's whatever teaches you to become the master of your space, to live in the eye of the storm. For some people, it may be a practice of yoga and meditation. For some people, it may be a martial art. For some people, it may be chanting or painting. For some, it may be spending time in nature. Whatever brings you into oneness with the object of your focus, whatever brings you absolutely into the present moment by your own choice, is a spiritual practice. But one thing is for certain, we all need a sadhana now. Our nervous systems are perpetually in fight or flight, and this has a lot of negative effects on our physical and mental health, which are already squeezed to the max by the many assaults on our well-being through the air, the water, the food, the radiation, and the fear-mongering that we're surrounded with. We need to be able to hold our own space. We need to be able to find the calm, the center, the eye of the storm, the eye of the eye. That was David Hawkins' book, Me Within Me. Because things are wild out there, and they're only going to get wilder. This is not to alarm you or scare you. It's part of it. The increasing intensity and acceleration of world events and cosmic energies coming our way is part of our training. It is the path by which we are ascending. It's not in opposition to, it's not against our ascension. It is the path. And I believe that the crazier things get out there, the better we will become at being the master of our space. Now is the time to keep up. We can't afford to coast anymore and just assume someone else is going to take care of it. No one is coming to save us. We have to save ourselves. We've always been the solution that we are looking for. It's not out there. It's in here. It always has been. Sacred intimacy is the experience of that. It's the realization that the universe is within me. I have everything within me. I can transform anything within me. Me within me. Assuming responsibility, doing what is necessary to ground yourself in that knowing. Turn off the noise, turn away from the propaganda, tune in within yourself, remove your reference point from the official narratives out there, and re-anchor it within your own intuitive knowing. The time is now. The excuse we usually give ourselves and others for why we don't have a daily spiritual practice, whatever it is that we don't have time. Life is so busy, we have so many responsibilities, it's hard to find the time for ourselves, it seems like a luxury, or it takes us away from potentially our other obligations, which we put first, before our duty to ourselves and our soul. When we're in this order of priorities, it's simply because we haven't understood yet the way that life works. We're still in a paradigm of believing that we are the doer, that we're in charge and in control of things, and if we don't do this and that and the other thing, everything's going to fall apart. Well, then we're still living backwards. The fearful ego wants to be in charge and controlling things. We're afraid to let go and let God, as the expression goes. It's a very strong illusion to break, and it's such an unexamined assumption that it's hard to see that we are not the doer at all. That life is unfolding spontaneously and it has nothing to do with us. We are part of it, we can get into harmony with it, or we can oppose and resist it, but it's happening anyway, whether we like it or not, and no matter what our preferences are. What happens eventually, though, is that we get so tired of swimming against the current, so tired of feeling like everything is so hard, that we learn to surrender. We learn to let life carry us to our destination, and we even kind of give up our notion of what that destination is supposed to be. And that's when we realize that there's something called spiritual leverage. It's where we put forth the least amount of effort, the least amount of doingness, let's say, to reap the maximum reward and benefit. Instead of taking action purely based on our to-do list or from a place of fear and a need to control outcomes, we strike at the moment of inspiration and allow the infinite organizing power of the universe to bring us whatever is needed. And this is how sadhana functions, as an act of spiritual leverage. This goes back to the principle of tithing. You might have heard of or practiced tithing in the old religious sense of giving 10% of your income to, traditionally speaking, a religious institution that you support. But the concept of tithing is a universal concept of leverage where 10% is the sweet spot of what we give or put forth in a state of trust for maximum return, by which I mean receiving whatever is right and appropriate for us and which the universe knows best. But it is knowing that we are supported and we will be given everything we need. In Kundalini Yoga, morning sadhana, the spiritual practice of the morning, is traditionally 2.5 hours long. Why 2.5 hours? Because 2.5 hours is roughly 10% of the 24 hours of a complete day and night cycle. So if you tithe that 10% of your time and energy every day to the sacred in you, it comes back to you. It provides everything you need. And just because we don't see a direct link between sadhana and what comes into our life doesn't mean the relationship isn't there. When we're in a linear causal mode of thinking, we tend to look for direct cause-effect relationships between things. So the mind says, well, how is doing 2.5 hours of spiritual practice going to put money in the bank? I've got to work. I got to bring in money. But our good can come through an unlimited number of channels, not just one. And when we calm our nervous system, relax, and trust, our energy field vibrates higher, and we're more open to all the ways that the universe can send us what is right and appropriate for our highest good. That's when we say things happen out of the blue. Does that mean you need to be practicing your sadhana for 2.5 hours every morning? You can. I mean, that would be amazing. Do I live by that ideal? No, I don't. I do practice just about every morning, but not necessarily the traditional 2.5 hour Kundalini Yoga sadhana. However, when I add up all the different things I do throughout the day in the name of sacred intimacy, whether it's yoga, meditation, being in nature, or other sacred intimacy practices I'm going to be sharing with you, it comes pretty close to that amount of time on the clock. But look, it's not my point to hold myself up as some example that you should follow. I'm very imperfect. I can be inconsistent. I can lose the thread just like anyone else. The point is to follow your intuitive sense of what is going to bring you consistently to the eye of the storm and do that, rather than being rigid or dogmatic about the way you do it. Because, of course, that's coming from a totally different energy, a totally different space of consciousness. I give myself a lot of leeway and a lot of forgiveness when it comes to sadhana. I also allow myself to be creative and connect with my intuition about what is needed right now. What I want to communicate to you today is that there is a path for you that goes all the way to the center of your being. A path of sacred intimacy by which you can experience the sense that everything really is okay. In fact, there are many paths that lead to the center, just as so many spokes on a wheel lead all to the center. And that sooner or later, you will find that path that goes to the center of your being. Do something every day, even for just a few minutes, that reminds you of who you really are beyond the personal self and its concerns. Find the moments to commune with yourself in sacred intimacy. At first, it feels like work. You have to exert a conscious effort to remind yourself to do it. But once you have a taste of it, it starts to draw you in. Your spiritual destiny is attracting you to itself. Your awakening and enlightenment are already scheduled. So keep up by sitting back, relaxing deeply, and allowing life to carry you home. It's paradoxical, like all spiritual truths. Find your sadhana and keep up to let go. I'll see you again soon for more sacred intimacy. Until then, walk in grace. Thank you for joining me in the grace space, where you're always in the right place. If you love this podcast, I invite you to subscribe to it and submit a review.